This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, we're back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I got some thoughts on Frank Martin. I got some thoughts on the Panthers. Some of the things we saw from over the weekend. We'll break down week 10 of the NFL season coming up later on this afternoon as well. And we'll get to our sound check in just a few moments where we bring you some of the sounds from throughout the football world over the weekend as we do every Monday here on the show. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. Or head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. And you can click on our show page and find the podcast there. You can also leave a comment for the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text line always open, 843-608-1734. Or you can give us a call, 843-721-9500. Heading off to Presbyterian for the game tonight. I have to return the rental car tomorrow, so I walked out to get into the car today. It was attacked by some birds. It is embarrassing. Now, I don't have time to run it through the car wash. I got to get to Presbyterian for a 7 o'clock tip-off tonight. This thing's disgusting, though, and it's embarrassing. I'm going to have to go drive down the highway. People are going to be looking at me. It is covered. I've never seen the thing so covered. By the birds. I parked near a tree. I guess they were hanging out in the tree. I don't know. It's nasty. You have to hold your nose just getting in the car. So I'm going to have to drive around in that thing tonight. And then I got to return the car. Am I supposed now what I got to do? I got to run this through the car wash before I bring it back? Are they going to charge me because it's got the bird feces all over this car?
I think our parking lot is actually part of a practice bombing range for birds.
You're not kidding. Now, I know that's why Bobby parks where he does. He, like, leaves an extra spot. He kind of parks between two spots because you don't want to park over by the tree here at the radio station because the birds hang out over there. So, but this case, I was parked by a different tree. I walk out to get into the car this morning. It is covered. I thought, wait, that's my car? I couldn't even recognize it because it looked like a new paint job. It's a white-looking car now. It's disgusting. So I'm driving around on that today. And I'm here in Charleston still, right? I'm doing the show from studio today, and then I got to hit the Presbyterian, so I don't really have time. I got to hop in that bad boy and get up to Presbyterian in time for airtime today. So there we go. So we're going to be riding in style with that bird-covered car out there. Looks disgusting. Everyone's going to be laughing at me. I'm going to be mocked. So if you're driving on the highway today, heading, you know, towards Presbyterian, and you see a car that's like half white and half, I don't even know what color it is. Half gray and white, that'll be me. The one that looks like it was attacked by a bunch of birds overnight or into the morning. So that's what I got to deal with. I don't know. I got to run that through the car wash or what? Can I bring it back to them? It's like Johnny Knoxville, right, in the movie Jackass when they rented the car and then he went out and they just beat the car. He put it into the demo derby and then tried to return it afterwards. Somewhat similar. You know, pass it off. Okay, now you can rent this car tomorrow. Here you go. So anyways. Every Monday, we always like to bring you around the football world with some of the best sounds from the football weekend in our sound check with some of the best calls from over the weekend. So we've got plenty from over the weekend of football. Earlier, I gave you my winners and losers from the college football weekend. Florida State, or I should say Miami, was one of those losers, specifically Manny Diaz, because he's been coaching for his job. He's put together a couple of good wins lately, but then you lose in a rivalry game to Florida State, and you lose at home on a 4th-and-14 was the play that did them in the final minute. Florida State converts a 4th-and-14 for a touchdown, wins the game. First time Miami has lost to Florida State in 5 years. It was a bad loss. Had a little bit of an awkward ending, but here's how the ending sounded on Florida State radio as they beat Miami Saturday.
Dropping, looking, throws the ball upfield. It is a caught ball at the 45-yard line with 2 seconds left. They have no timeouts. They'll hurry, get to the line of scrimmage. Clock will start as they set the chain gang. Now the center judge gets out of the way, and I think they whistled the play and stopped. Did the Seminoles call a timeout?
That clock is, how do you spike the ball with 2 seconds? That, there's not even enough time
Mike
do that.
Norvell was already out across the numbers, and he was.
By rule, in order for the quarterback to spike the ball, there has to be 3 seconds on the clock. There were two. Therefore, the ball game is over.
Yeah! Win, Knowles, win, Knowles, win!
Yeah!
How about Jordan Travis and the team, the little team that wanted to, could.
I just love that reaction when they get confirmation that they did, in fact, win, and the color analyst starts yelling. You hate that as a broadcaster when you have, it's like in baseball when the final play has to be reviewed first. You want a nice, clear finish that you can get excited about instead of waiting around on the officials. I also love that that's a rule, or that's a thought process. I didn't know that was a thing, that you figure you need at least 3 seconds to be able to get on the football and spike it and still have time remaining. It's like in basketball. There's that unwritten rule that if there's less than 0.4 seconds, you can't legally get a shot off in time. There has to be at least 0.4 on the clock. Otherwise, it's impossible, they've determined, to get a shot off before the clock actually does expire. It was a bad loss for Miami on Saturday. And as that clip was playing, Joe said in my ear, right, that used to be a mark your calendar. Those two, when they got together, that used to be one of the games you had to sit down and watch. And now Saturday, you probably didn't even know what's going on, unless you're a fan of Florida State or Miami. It's become irrelevant on both sides. So that's not good. And then it's not good for Manny to lose. First time they've lost in 5 years. At least they've been still winning those games. Miami hasn't been that great in recent years, but they've still been beating Florida State. They lost on Saturday on a 4th-and-14. Not good for Miami. Then there was this game, Texas Tech. It was one of the games I gave you as one of my picks on Thursday as a 10.5-point dog against Iowa State. Now, let me take you into my world for a moment. I don't know how maybe you watched this game or heard about it. For me, it's a little bit different. I can't just sit on the couch all day Saturday. I wish I could and watch all the games. I have my own game to work, right? The Citadel. So the way I do it is we do keep up with the games while we're on the air. We used to have a TV in the booth, and they took our cable box away. So we used to be able to watch some of the games, you know, during commercial break or halftime. You're looking up, seeing what's going on in college football. You're checking the scores on your phone during timeouts. But for me, I get home, and then I run through all the games on the DVR that night. And it's a lot, but, hey, it's what you got to do. And I love watching the games anyways, right? It's not work. I'm watching football all day, so it's all good. So I follow the games, and then I get home and I watch them and see how they played out. And Texas Tech I was paying close attention to because that was one of the picks I gave you Thursday. I bet on that game as Texas Tech in a 10.5-point underdog. So I'm paying closer attention to that game. And I saw that they won, and I thought, all right, perfect. Won that bet. And then I got home and I said, all right, let me watch to see how this game went. And I turned it on, and it was a tied game, less than a minute to go, and I'm thinking, how did Texas Tech win this game? I don't think it went to overtime. I know they won by over only three. And as I'm watching the game unfold, even though I already knew the score, the final score, the outcome, I still didn't know how it would end because they were not in field goal range. And I'm thinking, how is Texas Tech going to pull this off and win by three in regulation? Well, here's how. A 62-yard field goal as called here on Texas Tech Radio for the winner on Saturday.
Well, here it goes. Tied at 38, 3 seconds to go, 62-yard try. Garibay has his foot into it. It may be long enough. It is good! It is good! It is good! Jonathan Garibay has won the game with a 62-yard field goal! Oh, my God! Can you believe that? Woo! Yeah, baby!
That ball came off his foot like a rocket.
Wow. Oh, that hurt, man. Wow.
Love that call from Texas Tech. You could tell as the call, you know, as it builds up, at first they were kind of pessimistic, like, oh, 62-yarder, why are we even trying this? And then as he kicks it in the ball, you see there's a realistic chance. They get more and more excited until it goes through, and the play-by-play guy, you know, starts to go a little crazy there. Love it. What a kick, though. I mean, college kickers, to begin with, are very unreliable. 62-yarder to win the game? I mean, the NFL, the record is, what, 64? I mean, that's almost a record for the NFL, let alone college. I know it's a Texas Tech record. I haven't looked it up. I have to imagine that's a record for college football. Have we had a college football kicker kick another one more than 62 yards? And with that, also, the game on the line there, I mean, it's going to go to overtime. But still, to win the game on that kick, that was a hell of a kick for Texas Tech. I was watching it unfold in the DVR, knowing they already won, and thinking, this is how they won, a 62-yard field goal, and sure enough, he put it through. That's a heck of a kick right there. Sebastian Janikowski was drafted in the first round by the Raiders, you know, 20 years ago, and everybody mocked them. I don't know. Maybe you draft this kid in the first round. College kicker, kicking it from 62 yards out to win a game. How often do you see that? Big win for Texas Tech as a 10.5-point dog to win outright. And then there was the most embarrassing outcome of the weekend. Texas losing to Kansas. Now, I gave you all the numbers earlier. First win for Kansas ever at Texas. Texas's first 5-game losing streak in 65 years. Steve Sarkisian's the first Texas coach to begin 4-6. Yada, yada, yada. It was an embarrassing loss for Texas. Now, Kansas almost coughed it away. They were up by over 20 points at one point and ended up going to overtime. They tried to get too cute with this 4th-and-1 quarterback sneak that didn't work out too great. Texas got the football like 3 separate times in the last 4 minutes. Kansas couldn't put the game away. So we go to overtime. Texas scores, Kansas responds, and they think, why the heck not? We got nothing to lose. Let's go for 2 and the win. Here's how it sounded on Kansas radio Saturday.
Motion, Casey over. Daniels in the gun. He looks right. He's flushed out of the pocket to the right. Throwing on the run. It's caught. It's caught.
Casey.
And Kansas will win.
Holy cow.
Garrett Casey with the play of his life. And the Jayhawks take down Texas.
From Plainville, Kansas to Austin, Texas. JD threw it to his right in the breadbasket. And he pulled it in. What a play. What a game.
That's a play.
For the first time. Time in program history, the Kansas Jayhawks have won in Austin. You can rock, chalk it up. The Jayhawks win it 57-56. A Kansas winner with Jared Casey, the unlikely hero, on a 2-point conversion.
Yeah, he was the unlikely hero because he's a walk-on. The tight end that caught that to win is a walk-on. He makes the big catch there for Kansas, and they get a big-time win.
And Kansas is the Big 12's basketball school, too.
That's right.
So when you think of 2 points by Kansas, you think hoops.
That's true. Yeah, that was an embarrassing loss for Texas. You can't lose. You can't be the team to lose, especially at home to Kansas. So that was the first road win in the conference for Kansas since October of 2008. I always love to look back and see what things were like, right, the last time something happened. So I went back to look. October of 2008, I looked up that weekend. The top songs for that weekend. Number 3 was Kanye West's Love Lockdown. Number 2 was Pink So What. And the number 1 song, I don't remember those other two off the top of my head. I'd have to hear them, Kanye West and Pink. But I certainly know this one. And it was T.I., Whatever You Like. Right, you can have whatever you like, that whole song. Oh, man, that was played everywhere back then. And that was the number 1 song in October of 2008, the last time Kansas won a road game. In terms of movies, the number 3 movie that weekend was Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which I've never heard of. It's apparently a romance musical with Michael Cera and Kat Dennings. Got a pretty good cast. Never heard of it. The number 2 movie was Eagle Eye. Again, never heard of it. Shia LaBeouf and Billy Bob Thornton and Rosario Dawson and Michael Chiklis. This has a good cast, too. Never heard of this movie, Eagle Eye. And the number 1 movie, the last time Kansas won a road game in the Big 12, the number 1 movie was Beverly Hills Chihuahua. Never heard of that one either. Joe, you ever see Beverly Hills Chihuahua back in the day?
I think I've seen bits and pieces
of
it.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I have seen Eagle Eye.
Really?
Yes.
Was it any good?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Never heard of it. What about, you ever hear of Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist?
Yes, I have.
Really? Where
yes.
was I in October of 2008? I have never heard of any of these movies. Those were the top 3 movies the last time Kansas won a road game in the conference. Beverly Hills Chihuahua was number 1. Big win by Kansas. We also had on Saturday, getting back to a couple of the other pieces of audio, Georgia State goes on the road against Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina did not have their starting quarterback. Grayson McCall's injured. And Georgia State used this goal line stand in the final 100 seconds to get their program's first ever win against a top 25 team. Here's how it sounded for Georgia State.
Carpenter out of the shotgun. Carpenter going to leave it off. And a run play up the middle. Didn't get it. Georgia State stuffed him at the line. Great job by Georgia State. They stuffed the shot of clears on a run on a 2-point conversion play after the penalty. And the Panthers will get the ball with 1:09 to go.
They won 42-40. Wild game. Tough loss for Coastal without their quarterback. Big win for Georgia State. And Sean Elliott, former coach of the Gamecocks, who was the interim when Spurrier stepped aside, longtime offensive line coach, yada, yada, yada. He gets a big win there for Georgia State on Saturday. Tough one for Coastal. Staying within the state, dramatic games that came down to a two-point conversion, this one did as well. It was the Citadel. Yes, of course, we have to play this. A little self-serving, but a big-time win for the Citadel as they erased an 11-point deficit in the second half to come back, force overtime against Wofford on Senior Day. And after the Citadel scored a touchdown in overtime, Wofford then scored a touchdown in overtime, and the Terriers, on an 8-game losing streak, decided to go for two and the win here at Johnson Haygood Saturday in OT. Here's how it sounded for the Citadel.
After 135 snaps today, it comes down to this one. The Bulldogs lead 45-44 in overtime. Wofford going for two in the win. Derrick's in the shotgun, split backs. Has a tight end to the left side, two receivers right. Game on the line. Derrick, arms extended, takes the snap. Play action. He'll throw to the end zone. It's knocked away!
Dominic Poole
with the game-winning play. And this one belongs to the Bulldogs. 45-44 in overtime. As Poole is swarmed on the field, the Bulldogs team rushing the turf, and the Citadel snaps their 5-game losing streak, holding off the Terriers in overtime, 45-44 in a come-from-behind victory on Senior Day.
They tried to pick Dominic Poole on the outside. Destin Mack gave him just a little bit of room to get inside. He got up in there, was able to break it apart. That was a great play by the freshman.
The Bulldogs have been on the wrong end. I think back to Chattanooga here at home, 2018. They went for two in overtime and won. It happened another time since. Maybe it was the Samford game in overtime those years ago. But in my time here at the Citadel, I think they were 0-for-2 previously in that situation where they lost on a two-point conversion in overtime. And this time, they got the stop to beat Wofford on Saturday. 9 straight losses for Wofford. That's the longest losing streak since 1946. They'll also, unless they beat UNC on Saturday, have fewer than 2 wins in back-to-back seasons for the first time since 1939. It's been a tough stretch for Wofford. I talked to a couple of different people Saturday who both believe a change is coming there. Meanwhile, for the Citadel, a big win for them on Senior Day. Right, last home game for probably 24 seniors. Some of them may still be able to return next year because of the COVID eligibility and this whole thing, and it's hard to determine right now who actually has where they are on the field in terms of eligibility because of COVID and redshirts and this and that. But for those kids playing on that field, most of them, one final time for those seniors, a big-time comeback win. The last 2 times the Citadel has come back in the second half to win, both against Wofford. They erased a 17-point deficit in the spring, an 11-point deficit in the fall to beat the Terriers in a trophy game. So big-time win Saturday for the Citadel. Sold-out crowd, a lot of fun, wild outcome, dramatic finish, and maybe not too bad on that final call. Last one we'll get to you. Usually, it's just in college football because those are more dramatic. And I don't know, the broadcasts just feel for college football, I don't know, there's just something about it. It feels more like intimate, and the broadcasters get more into it. You have like wilder finishes in college football, it seems. But in the NFL, this comes from Pittsburgh. One of the uglier games yesterday and of the entire football weekend. The Steelers and the Lions finished in a tie. Neither team wanted to win. The Lions missed a field goal, the Steelers fumbled twice, and here they were in the final seconds of overtime trying to get into field goal range when the Steelers fumbled it away, leading to the tie, and you can hear a little bit of the disgust in the broadcast, the disgust that it is going to be a tie between the Steelers and the Lions.
Takes the snap, throws the out, it's pulled in by Freiermuth, and the ball is out, and they dive for it, and I think the Lions have fallen on it. Yep. It is Deshaun Hand who ended up with the football on Freiermuth's mistake. 8 seconds to go.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Oh, that's painful.
That really is. As he turns up north and south.
On the field, the fumble recovered by the defense. First down, Detroit.
Freiermuth was hit hard by Will Harris, a third-year safety out of Boston College. And then did Flowers end up with it? Well, it doesn't matter. Detroit has the ball. The Steelers fumble away an opportunity in overtime.
You can hear the deep breaths, the sighs from the color analyst. That was a brutal game. And it wasn't one of those like back and forth. They couldn't stop. No, neither team could even get into a position to score. It was a 16-16 tie, and neither team scored. The Steelers had a field goal in the fourth quarter. That was it after the third quarter. Fourth quarter or overtime. We had 3 total points. That was an ugly game. Now, the Lions still couldn't find a way to win. If you can't win that game, I don't know when you're going to win if you're Detroit. but at least we won't have an 0-17 team this year. We may just have an 0-16-1 team. Meanwhile, for Pittsburgh, it happened again. Najee Harris, and I know he's only a rookie. He said afterwards, oh, I didn't know we could tie. Right? He's used to college where you have a winner. Every time there's an overtime game, we hear somebody from that game afterwards, like Donovan McNabb years ago, say, I didn't know you could tie in the NFL. Harris, I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because he's only a rookie. McNabb was a veteran at that time. But how do these guys still not know the rules and know that there are ties in the NFL, as dumb as that is? Yesterday, they always say a tie is like kissing your sister or like kissing your cousin, right? This was even worse because that game was so brutal. That was a disgustingly bad football game between the Steelers and the Lions in the rain, in the freezing rain in Pittsburgh, and it ends in a tie. Detroit, you got so close, but you still can't win. Coming up, I understand Panther fans are very excited about Cam Newton's return, and yesterday was a lot of fun. But coming up, I'll tell you why I think it's not a good sign for their future. And we'll do that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, I know Panther fans are very excited about Cam Newton's return, and yesterday was an exciting day, but I'll let you know why it may not be a good sign for their future. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I told you earlier about how my car was attacked, and it's a rental that I got to return, so now it doesn't look so great. It was attacked by a bunch of birds out there. I've said it before, but this parking lot, it's like the zoo or something. We've had these Canadian geese roam around out there. Got the cats that Bobby keeps feeding. Bobby said the reason why his car never gets attacked like that is because he is so friendly to the animals out there, because he always feeds the cats. I don't think that cat likes me. I don't really like that cat, I have to be honest with you. Because I get home, right, from these road trips, and it's a black cat. It's hiding underneath the car, comes running out. It's, 2 a.m., it's dark out. It scares the heck out of me, and this cat is always everywhere. Try to get into the front door. One day the cat threw up in front of the front door. Get these feral cats out of here. But apparently I have to be more friendly because they all have an alliance together. The birds around here, the Canadian geese, the cat, and they're all teaming up on me. I like the idea. Two ideas came in from listeners. Number one was have Bobby go take the car to get washed while I am on the air. I like that. And number two, somebody said this would be the perfect opportunity to get some sort of car wash to sponsor. This just the station, the whole thing, the parking lot, because it can be a hazard zone out there.
Hint, hint to our sales weasels. Get on it.
Yeah, that is actually a good idea. Appreciate that idea.
And I often call the one black cat, I call him Salem.
Yes, that's
right. From Sabrina the Teenage Witch, making the smart aleck remarks.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. He's being a smart aleck with
you. I guess so. I tell you what, if that cat could talk as well out there, then I'd be more friendly. I'd hang out with him. But otherwise, keep that cat away. And the birds, too. And I love animals, but not when they're coloring my car for me. It's embarrassing out there. Cam Newton returned yesterday for the Panthers, and it was a great day. Look, they beat the Cardinals. They blow them out, even though the Cardinals, they were all banged up. Still, they had just beaten the Niners. It's a good win. You go on the road, you blow out the Niners. Good win for Carolina. Cam Newton returns, and of course, you couldn't write it up any better. He gets a touchdown in his first two touches. They bring him in that goal line package. He sweeps to the right side. He goes barreling in, and he scores the touchdown. And then he's yelling at the crowd, I'm back, and yelling at the TV. And if you're a Panthers fan, you probably got goosebumps. It gave you a cool moment, like, oh, yeah, Cam Newton's back, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know if it's a great sign for their future, and I'll explain why. First, let's hear from some of the people of the organization, Matt Rhule. Now, again, we were not on the air Friday, and this news came out while we were on the air, if I remember correctly, on Thursday. So Matt Rhule, at the time, this was prior to the game Sunday and Cam Newton's actual return, here was Matt Rhule, head coach of the Panthers, at the time, talking about the idea of bringing in Cam Newton.
Team that we feel like can win. I told you guys yesterday, we have the second-ranked defense. Christian's back. Some things are starting to hopefully come into place. And, we owe it to our players to try to go win. We owe it to our fans to try to go win. We're bringing in Cam now. I mean, he's a former MVP. So to have a guy like that have a chance to come in, you know, to me, it was just a no-brainer. I talk so much about process and building and all those things that people aren't like, I'm not saying I'm not trying to win now. I'm just saying I'm not going to sacrifice the future to go, you know, 9-7. You know, I want to build a Super Bowl team. And so that requires disciplined decisions. I think this is a disciplined decision. I'm happy that people are excited. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I want to someday have a ticker tape parade here in Charlotte, right? So, you know, it hasn't happened yet. And that weighs on my conscience, right? Like, I want to bring a Super Bowl to this city.
That was Matt Rhule when they first signed Cam Newton. Now, I'll get back to those comments coming up in just a moment, but it stood out to me when he said, right, we don't want to sacrifice the future. We don't want to try to get a 9-7 season, giving up, some of the prospects for the future. Keep that in mind. I'll circle back to that. But here was Cam Newton when he was signed, and this was what Cam said at the time last week when he was brought back to the Panthers, speaking to the media last week.
Floyd, this ain't for no ticket sales. This ain't for no, you know, Cinderella story. It's to win football games. And that's pretty much what's on my heart, and that's how I'm going about it. This could be something special. But this wasn't no apology. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, man, we did you wrong. Let's bring you back. And like, no.
That was Cam Newton last week. Look, I don't know what apology he's looking for. I don't think the Panthers did him wrong at all. Do we believe that because of the success he had there, they should have kept on to him, paid him, you know, all sorts of money? I thought they made the right move at the time. I still believe they made the right move moving on. Patriots gave him a try. Didn't work out there. They moved on after a year. And no team picked him up until he returned to Carolina this year. So I know Cam feels slighted, and I imagine most athletes would in that scenario. But really, from the outside looking in, I don't think the Panthers did him wrong at all. But here's what's funny. The Panthers had Cam Newton. Then they got rid of him. They went out and they got Teddy Bridgewater. Then they got rid of him. Then they went out and they got Sam Darnold. They're going to get rid of him. He's on the team. He's injured. They're talking now that he may be out for the year after initially this was supposed to be like about a 4 to 6 week injury. I think it's just their way to get rid of Sam Darnold or not return him this year. And now they're back to Cam Newton, where they all started. So he is replacing the replacement to his replacement. It's like if you go out to eat with your significant other and you show up at the first restaurant and it's a Saturday night. If you ever try to go out to eat around here Saturday night, right, you know it can be very busy no matter what restaurant you go to. So you go to the first restaurant and there's a little bit of a wait. And you think like, there's so many options. I'm hungry. It's already kind of late. I don't want to wait. Let's go somewhere else. Right? When you initially got in the car, you and your wife, your husband, whatever, you thought, where do you want to go out? Where do you want to go to eat tonight? And they run off three options. Oh, we could go here, we could go here, we could go here. You think, okay, good. Those are three good options. Let's go to this one first. And you get there, and it's a little bit of a wait, and you think, I don't want to wait. Let's go to one of those other spots. So you go somewhere else. And you get to the second restaurant, and it's an even longer wait. And then you think, okay, this isn't any better. Let's go to that third spot you mentioned. And you go there, and it's not even open. It's closed for some reason. So you think, oh, well, let's just go back to the first restaurant. Right? That was the shortest wait at the time, and we like that place better. So you wind up back at the first restaurant, but then you walk in and they say, well, it's actually now an even longer wait. And it's already like 8:30, right? It's already late at night. And it's like, oh, well, this was a total bust. This was a disaster. We should have just stayed here the first time. And I guess in that sense, you probably could say the same about the Panthers. While I agree with their move, moving on from Cam Newton at the time, the way things have played out now, they're paying three quarterbacks to replace Cam Newton currently. And one of them is Cam Newton, right? They traded away three draft picks to get Sam Darnold. They are paying Cam Newton more than the Patriots spent on him. I think they're paying him twice as much as New England did last year, and they're only going to get half a season. All this trouble just to be back where they started, except probably in a worse situation now because he's a year and a half older than when you got rid of him. And you're paying him probably more than, you know, than the Patriots paid him. Paying him more than you probably could have for the past year and a half. Just like when you show up back to that restaurant and it's an even longer line. It'll even longer wait, and it's even later. And you're thinking, well, this was a real disaster. We should have just stayed here the first time instead of trying to go out and finding a better option, knowing there weren't really many great options out there. And all the while, for the Panthers, they could have just drafted Justin Fields, which in this scenario is probably just like cooking at home. It would have been a lot easier if we just reheated the leftovers. We wouldn't have had to worry about it. Nah, maybe it wouldn't be as good as a nice meal out, but we'd have already eaten. We wouldn't have to wait. We wouldn't have to drive around. Right? You draft Justin Fields. Maybe it's not as exciting as a Cam Newton or even a Teddy Bridgewater. He's not as developed. But it'd be a lot easier just drafting Justin Fields this year than trading these draft picks, signing this guy, paying for this guy, spending money on all these guys. But as I said in my tease, I don't think this is a good sign for Carolina. And it really has nothing to do with Cam himself personally. It's more because of the owner, David Tepper, who is a rich, impatient owner. And he's a first-time owner, and he wants to win right away. So they dump Cam when he took over, right? Cam Newton wasn't good enough. And they go out and they get Teddy Bridgewater with a big contract. They overpaid for him. And then they dump him after a year. Wasn't good enough. So then they go out and they get Sam Darnold, and they trade away a bunch of draft picks, and they even pick up his extension for next year before he even plays a game, right? Really overpaying for Sam Darnold. And I thought it would work out, but still, regardless, you know, still at the time, you're throwing a lot of resources at that. And for all intents and purposes, they now dump him after half a season. He's injured, but you bring in Cam Newton. Now they're talking about Darnold's out for the year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not back next year. If he is, he'll be as a backup. Right? He's not the answer. We know that. I was wrong. So then, after that, you go out and you throw the bank at Cam Newton. And you give him potentially up to $10 million for half a season just to bring him back. Right? It's unsettled. The organization, the way it's operated, the quarterback, it's a quarterback carousel. That's not good. And they'll probably just go out and get another quarterback this offseason. If Deshaun Watson's available, they'll probably throw the kitchen sink at him if he figures out his legal situation. If Russell Wilson wants out of Seattle, right, they'll probably throw the kitchen sink at him. And now for somebody like that, it's worth it. But it's like George Steinbrenner, right? Firing Billy Martin, then rehiring him. Then firing him, and then rehiring him. Then hiring this guy, and then bringing back Billy Martin. And he fired Billy Martin like 8 times over their careers. You ever work for a boss like that who's incredibly impatient? And they may not think things through, or they don't really care about the employees. They don't think about the employee side or how it could affect the employees. They make rash decisions. They're very impulsive. They change their mind, you know, before lunch. They tell you one thing, and then they come back from, actually, we're going to do this. It's like, we're all over the place. It's not a very sturdy office setting. It's kind of like David Tepper. We're moving on from Cam. Let's get Teddy Bridgewater. We're moving on from Teddy. Let's go trade for Sam Darnold. Let's bring Cam back. Okay, now we got to go get another quarterback next year. It's like, what's going on around here? And by the way, they did a study. I was reading about this yesterday. They did a study that rich people, they did it based off of how much money you have, right? Your socioeconomical class. Rich people, they determined through this study, are worse decision makers than the middle class or any of the classes below them, right? Like the more money you have, the worse of a decision maker you are. They did this study. Now, it might sound crazy. Like, what are you talking about? These rich people, how are they bad decision makers? But it's actually very simple when you think about it, because they can be more aggressive. Of course, you could be a worse decision maker when you are David Tepper with millions of dollars. This is the same guy that bought a house of his former boss who didn't give him a promotion just to blow it up out of spite. He spent tons of money to buy a house just to blow it up because it was his former boss's house who didn't give him a promotion he thought he deserved years ago when he was kind of starting out. So to get back at him, he bought his house and he blew it up. Right, that's a guy. He's got what they call like the FU money. Yeah, he's got plenty of that. So he can make some bad. Was that the best decision to buy a house just to blow it up? Probably not, but he can do it because he's got money. You can be a little more careless. You can throw some money around. Problem is, I don't think that's how you build a football team. I don't think I would like the idea of shuffling guys in and out, of bringing in now, if you count Cam as two separate people because it's been like two separate moves. Right, this is, three quarterbacks in two seasons, in two-plus seasons here. And if you count Cam twice, like I said, four quarterbacks in 3 years, they'll probably bring in another one next year. That's not how you win. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. The Vikings went through this for years. They never had a franchise quarterback. They never drafted a guy. It was just plugging a hole 1 year to the next. And you bring in Brett Favre for 2 years, and then you bring in this guy, and you bring in that guy, and Randall Cunningham, and Warren Moon, all these veterans. That's not how you need a consistent. You need a Tom Brady for 20 years. You need a Peyton Manning for 20 years. You need an Aaron Rodgers for 20 years. Right, Ben Roethlisberger. Those are the teams that have consistent success. But David Tepper maybe is that type of guy that, you know, is very impatient, makes impulsive decisions. He watches Sam Darnold struggle. That's it. We got to move. This guy's not the answer. We got to move on. Let's go get Cam. Let's bring Cam Newton back. Pay him $10 million to do it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was David Tepper who wasn't sold on a draft pick like Justin Fields simply because he didn't have the patience to wait on a rookie. So he figures, well, let's just trade 3 draft picks for Sam Darnold instead and hope that works out. Because at least we know what we're getting. You know, at least we've seen him play, and he's been in the NFL, and we don't have to wait on him like a Justin Fields, you know, wait for him to even get into the lineup in year two. But they overspent for Teddy. They overspent for Sam Darnold. They're overspending for Cam Newton. None of them are the long-term answers. And now they're paying all 3. And I like being aggressive, right? Aggressive can be good, but right now the Panthers are a little bit more on the side of reckless, if you ask me, than aggressive. You want to go be aggressive for a Russell Wilson, a Deshaun Watson, an Aaron Rodgers this offseason? That makes sense. I could get behind that. You want to be aggressive for a Teddy Bridgewater, a Sam Darnold, a Cam Newton when no one else is calling? I think that comes off as just a little more desperation than it does aggression. And going back to Matt Rhule's comments that began the whole thing, I think the Panthers have actually done the opposite of what Rhule was saying about not sacrificing the future for the present. Isn't that what you kind of did by trading away all those draft picks for Sam Darnold and not drafting a quarterback? Isn't that what you're kind of doing right now by bringing in Cam Newton? There's no future for Cam with the Panthers. He's not your franchise quarterback down the road. There's a reason why you got rid of him. You bring him in now just because you're 500. You know, he's better than P.J. Walker, you believe, and you could get to the playoffs with him. And Matt Rhule's a guy who's built programs before. He did it at Temple. He did it at Baylor. That was the idea here with the Panthers. Maybe that's what he wants to do. I don't know if it's what the Panthers have done, and I think that comes from David Tepper. You know, a rich, aggressive owner who's made plenty of money over the years, can be a little bit rash, goes out there, makes these moves, throws money around. Because in life, right, that's what you can do. You got a problem with a car, all right, let me just go buy another car. Not worry about fixing it or anything. I'm just going to go spend more money on a new car that won't break down on me. Yeah, whatever it is. Problem at the house, oh, that's fine, fix it. And do it even better. Let's renovate while we're fixing the issue. Now you got plenty of money. They've done a study. People with more money make worse decisions. Why? It's not because they're dumber. It's because they can be more aggressive. They have money to spend. They got money to blow. It's like a gambler, right? If you have more money in your bank account to gamble with, you can be a little more aggressive than the guy who's down to his last few pennies. He's like, I got to be real smart with my money. And David Tepper, I think, is trying to kind of run the team the same way. I don't know if that's the best way. By the way, I feel for P.J. Walker because he played pretty well yesterday and they won the game. And it was Cam Newton who got interviewed on the field after the game by Fox. Right, Cam Newton played a handful of snaps. He's the one that gets interviewed. It was Cam Newton who was at the post-game press conference with Robbie Anderson. I mean, he was the backup yesterday. It was Cam Newton who everyone's talking about his touchdown instead of any of the other plays of the game. It was Cam Newton who the Panthers tweeted out yesterday a photo of Matt Rhule and Cam Newton and said QB1. I mean, he hasn't even been named the starter yet. The social media team's already doing it. Now, maybe that's a reference to the quarterback wearing number one, right? Cam Newton, his jersey number's number one. But I do kind of feel bad for P.J. Walker. I mean, he went out there. He played well. They got a big win against the Cardinals. That should be the story. Instead, it's like, hey, Cam Newton had a couple of touchdowns off the bench. And Cam Newton's got this, if you watched it, this very, like, emotional interview on the field after the game. And then he was, like, reciting gospel and at the post-game press conference. Talking about, I don't know what, Moses or something. I don't even know what he was talking about. It's like, eh. You know, it's the reason why people didn't want to bring in Tim Tebow, because he was going to be a star as a backup quarterback. You do not want your backup quarterback doing press conferences during the week and answering all the questions. That's not good for the starting quarterback. Now, Cam Newton's eventually going to become the starting quarterback, and he is a bigger star than P.J. Walker, but I just kind of felt bad. I don't really like how that played out. Cam Newton had the exciting plays. It's a great storyline. I get that. But they got a big win on the road, and they interviewed Cam Newton on the field after the game. He played, what, like 8 plays yesterday? P.J. Walker was the starter. He went through the reps all week. You know, Cam Newton's the one at the podium after the game talking about the win. He played about 10% of the game. But that's the type of personality he is, and I'm sure he'll be the starter this weekend. Coming up, for Gamecock fans, I don't know why you expected anything to be different this weekend, and I'm not talking about just the football team. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Color in sky, brush and blue. Scarlet fleece changes hue. Crimson ball sinks from view. Wear your love like heaven.
Coming up, Gamecock fans, I don't know why you'd expect anything to be different. And I'm not just talking about the football team. Get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. It was a tough little 24-hour stretch for Gamecock fans over the weekend. They did get the win yesterday in terms of basketball. But football lost to Missouri. We talked about that earlier. That was a letdown. And the basketball team lost to Princeton on Friday night. And Princeton is a good Ivy League program and a good, you know, like mid-major, but if you're South Carolina, you shouldn't lose to Princeton. And just the way they lost, the way they played in their first couple of games, even yesterday in the win. Look, the number one issue for Frank Martin teams, we know this, we've talked about it before, They can't shoot. They're not good enough shooters. And you need to be able to shoot nowadays. Now, I know numbers don't always work well on the radio, so bear with me here for a moment because these are the ranks for South Carolina in field goal percentage in college basketball since hiring Frank Martin. 271st, 311, 302, 211, 296, 344, 285, 166. Last year, they were 293rd in field goal percentage. Right now, they're 309th in field goal percentage. So you had 2 years in there out of a decade in which they were better than 270. And that's in terms of ranking the teams, right? Number one being the best shooting team in the country. Number 350 being the 350th worth. Twice, they were better than 270th in the country. And we know, if you watch the team, if you're a Gamecock fan, you know they haven't had shooters. They can't shoot. It's not what they do well. Now, Frank Martin had said things will be different this year. I remember when we were on the show at the time, reading off the quotes that he ushered in the offseason, that he uttered in the offseason about South Carolina. This year's going to be different, realizing, yeah, we need to, you know, be more athletic. We need to have better shooters. He said things will be different, which, you know, is always, it's the classic, you said it'd be different this time. You can't always believe people when they say that. But he said, we realize we need better shooters, sold us on the shooters they do have. Well, then they went out this year and they started shooting 7 of 42 from beyond the arc. 7 of 42 on threes, which is 16%. Right now, they're not much better. They shot a little better yesterday. Right now, they're 23% on the year. In fact, entering yesterday's game, South Carolina, and it's a very small sample size. We're only a week into the season. They played only two games. But entering yesterday, South Carolina was last in the country in three-point percentage. So not even just like, you know, 200th. Literally last in three-point percentage. Again, only two games. But you sold us on this idea of the offseason, it's going to be different this time. We're going to have better shooters. And then you start the season with the literally the worst shooting performance in the country for the first week. Right? Nothing's different. Now, Frank, after that loss to Princeton, what didn't seem worried and did say that he has confidence in his new shooters and knows their shots will eventually fall. The lack of production from deep certainly has been an obvious weakness so far. He's talked up some of these shooters that he brought in, like Reese and Stevenson and Carter Jr., hasn't really been the case. But I was thinking about this. As I was watching that game unfold, I thought, this shouldn't be a surprise. Because coaches don't change who they are. Which coach has ever reinvented themselves? It's what is so impressive about Nick Saban. It's why it is so noteworthy. Why we give so much props to Saban, because really he's the only one to do it. Used to be a defensive guy, and while he himself isn't running the offense, he has at least opened things up offensively. And now Alabama's about offense. It's not like Saban switched from calling the defense to calling the offense, and they're like, wow, that's really impressive. But at least the program, the philosophy of the program has changed the last couple of years, and for his case, the better. But he's really the only one. Right? Like Mike Leach will always be an air raid guy. You could tell Mike Leach till you're blue in the face, like, we need to run the football more. Okay, well, he's not your guy. He's not going to change. You're not going to wake up one day and Mike Leach is going to be running the triple option. It doesn't work that way. His philosophy is air raid. Option coaches are always going to run the option. Right? Go tell any of the guys. Paul Johnson's not coaching anymore, right? But he's like the guy that you always think of for the option offense in recent years. Right? Go tell him, like, hey, we want you to start passing the football more. No, I don't think that's going to happen. They don't change. They can't reinvent themselves. Jim Boeheim is still running the same zone defense for 50 years. Hasn't changed. People will point to Coach K, you know, embracing one-and-dones, but that's more of a recruiting philosophy, not so much the actual X's and O's. And again, he's really the only one you can point to, and he's probably the best to ever do it. So the all-time greats, Saban, Coach K, I don't know, maybe you want to tell me Bill Belichick, that team is different from year to year. Okay, fine. They're the all-time greats. Outside of the best coaches to ever do it, has there been another one that has reinvented himself? Have you ever seen a coach win running the option and then win doing something else? Right, then win as an air raid coach? And I was talking about this over the weekend, actually with my brothers, and they said, well, you know, because you don't change if you're good enough. And I said, yeah, that's, you know, that's true. Right, like if you're successful, why do you need to change what you're doing? And if you're unsuccessful, you're probably not given the opportunity to change what you're doing because it's not working. But Frank Martin has been given quite the leash here now 10 years to try to make a change. It's been the same problem every year. I just gave you the numbers. His teams can never shoot. It leads to the downfall. I know they had that Final Four run, but otherwise, zero tournament appearances. So overall, it hasn't been working. And you look around, right? Roy Williams, Coach K, Jim Beilein are the older coaches that left or are leaving. Coach K's retiring. Roy Williams already did. John went to the NBA. He's now out of coaching. He took such a gamble going to the NBA to get out of college because the game is changing. And instead of these coaches changing, they think, that's it. I'll just give it up. But they're so against changing their philosophy or their coaching style or their thought process or, you know, moving away from the game that they always loved, that they'd rather just retire and leave. Why isn't Andrew Dice Clay as popular anymore? Because you can only hear his stupid nursery rhymes for so long. And after a while, I think, like, okay, what else do you got? Right, the shtick gets old. How many times can you see Dice smoke a cigarette from behind his head and still get a kick out of it? He's never been able to reinvent himself. He was in a show a couple of years ago I remember watching. Same guy, same shtick. It's like, all right, you're 60 years old now and overweight. Like, enough of this leather coats and smoking cigarettes behind your back, being a biker. Like, you just look weird now. And didn't have a second act. Most coaches don't have a second act either. You get fired before you turn things around because you can't. Right? Most coaches don't even get the opportunity for a second act. You don't go to Paul Johnson and say, hey, this option thing isn't working out anymore. How about you start throwing it around? No, he's not going to change the offense, and you're not going to keep him around long enough to work his way through it. You move on, and you bring someone else in who will make that change that you want to see. And the Final Four was 5 years ago, but since then, they're six games under 500 in the conference. And nothing's going to be different this year because coaches don't change. Belichick has never been able to draft skill players. Jim Calhoun's teams can never shoot free throws. Calipari's teams are always young and experienced and melt down in the tournament. A leopard doesn't change its spots. I don't like to say I told you so. I love to say it. And I've said that this is an issue, and it's not going to work out. I've said it since I've been on the air here. Frank Martin's teams can't shoot it well enough, and you need to be able to shoot now in order to win. And now suddenly the idea is, well, 10 years in, there's just going to be a switch to flip. Okay, now we're going to start developing outside shooters. Takes to the 10th year, right? It would have happened by now if that was the case. Okay, now we'll start shooting from the outside. We'll start recruiting and developing outside shooters and run an offense based around three-pointers. Now in year 10, okay, we'll start doing that. I didn't feel like doing it the first 9 years, so let me start doing it now. That's not how it works. He's more of a physical, defensive, slashing type of offensive coach. It just doesn't work well in 2021. And his mentor, Bob Huggins, who I know was on the Scott Hamilton show this morning, and according to reports was a little a little put off or a little standoffish. Huggins, though, is finding out the same thing. His teams can never shoot. They just press. They play good defense. They try to get steals and easy layups. His teams have been under 500 over the last 4 years in the Big 12. That's not working for him either. You got to be able to shoot it now. You got to be able to score the basket. And South Carolina, under Frank Martin, everywhere he's been. Kansas State, Cincinnati, wherever. All right, it's always been about like defense, playing hard, being physical. Don't have the outside shooters. We have guys that are going to try to get to the basket instead. 2021, though, it's not really like that. You need those outside shooters. It's all about the three-pointer. And I don't think just by year 10, okay, now we'll switch to that. We'll turn it on now. Good luck trying to teach, you know, like your grandfather, trying to get him out of certain habits. You know, the old expression, right? You can't teach an old dog new tricks. It's kind of the case here.
Actually, you're talking about Andrew Dice Clay. He did try to reinvent himself in the mid-90s. He dropped the Dice thing, went by Andrew Clay, and he even did some short-lived sitcom.
Ah, yeah, but so see, He tried it. It didn't work.
So he went back to what does work.
Yeah, I don't know if that's working anymore either. But that further proves my point. Most people don't have that second act in them. They have one way to do things. And when they have to change, they can't really figure it out because they've always done things a certain way. That's how they were successful. Sorry, Dice. I don't mean to pick on you. I used to like your stuff, but enough already. Hour 3 coming up next. We'll break down week 10 of the NFL season. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.